Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who's so excited for today's show. My heart is beating out of my chest like Ryan. I'm Rob Cisternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. We got a great show for you guys today. Very excited to have the winner of Survivor China, Todd Herzog, here with us on the podcast. And I could not be more excited. I've been looking forward to this one for a few weeks, and it's definitely been a minute, about 4+ years since Todd was last on the podcast. Of course, obviously going through everything that he's been through with battling alcohol abuse. He is back on the right path and joining us today on the podcast to talk about everything from season 35. I'm sure we'll talk a lot of Survivor China 20 seasons ago in season 15 of Survivor. Of course, I also got to our exit interview this morning. I spoke with Desi Williams and we got into everything about why she was the person who got voted out and much more. Be sure to check that out. Plus, I got to battle Josh Wiggler in the This Week in Survivor History quiz. And then coming up this weekend, Brett LaBelle is going to join me on the feedback show. Be sure to get your questions in for that show, either by voicemail. Rob is a website. .com/voicemail 323-282-RHAP or email in your questions survivor@robhasawebsite.com. Before we bring Todd on the line, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are friends over at canvaspeople.com. You guys have heard me talk about Canvas People for months now, and they are the best, and they are going to be doing great work for you this time of year because they are the ultimate place to go for that gift for somebody that it is hard to figure out what to get them, because Canvas People has a great offer right now for you to try out their service where you can get an 11 by 14 canvas photo for $0 pricing. You just pay the shipping, send them pictures of all the times that you spent together, like that time that your tribe won that reward and you guys got to go eat family style spaghetti, whatever, that those special moments, find a way to capture them. Nicole and I have used them. They're great for pictures of the boys, perfect for the grandparents, anybody in your secret Santa, whatever. Canvaspeople.com is the place to turn. Take any picture from your phone or your camera. You just upload it. They turn it into a beautiful canvas work of art. For our listeners, they've got this great offer, 11 by 14 photo canvas, normally $69.99 plus shipping. To our listeners, they'll reduce that price down to $0. What? That's right. You just pay the shipping. They're so sure you'll love the gorgeous canvases, they'll give you the first one for free. Over 1 million satisfied customers so far, ready for you to be the next one. So to get this offer, go to canvaspeople.com, upload your photo, select the 11 by 14 size, enter promo code RHAP in the promo code box in the cart to get that special $0 pricing. That's at canvaspeople.com, promo code RHAP. All right, I'm very excited to bring in today's guest, and it has been a minute, certainly, since we last talked to this man. It was actually over 4 years ago since he was last on the podcast, and of course that he has had a lot going on in his life since that time, but I'm very excited to bring back the winner of Survivor China, Todd Herzog. Todd, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me, Rob. I'm super excited to do that.
Okay, Todd. Yeah, it's been a very long time. I actually listened to the last interview we did together, and it had actually been 3 years since you were on before that. And I was saying, oh my God, Todd, it's been so long since you were on. And so, yeah, so we have to do better than 3 times in 7 years, Todd. But I know everybody wants to know.
I agree.
Yeah, how are you doing?
I am excellent. I am doing wonderful. I am sober, living in Utah, working, staying busy, and having a good time.
Okay. I know that everybody was, you know, very concerned about you. I'm sure that, you know, a lot of the fans saw everything with Dr. Phil. And I honestly, like when I first heard about it, I thought it was like, oh, okay, well, I had no idea that everything was so serious. You know, I thought it was just like, okay, I figured, is this a publicity stunt? What's going on? And then I tuned in, and because I've seen like Johnny Fairplay go on Dr. Phil, I didn't know that that was like a serious thing. And then I was like, oh my God, I couldn't believe it, Todd.
Well, I mean, I won't lie. Everybody else could see how bad it was except for myself. And I mean, keep in mind, it is still a television show, so it was very dramatized.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, my drinking did get completely out of control. The truth is I just didn't want to stop until about a year ago. And that's when I finally, you know, got my shit together and was like, all right, let's do this. And I jumped on board that sober living lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was it as a direct result from the treatment from the Dr. Phil show, or this was from that entirely different method?
That me wanting to get sober?
Yeah.
It was honestly, I just kind of reached a point where I was like, wow, this really is a big deal. And I'm just existing. I'm not living anymore. And for me, the Dr. Phil thing, like the interventions aren't a good way to get someone sober.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, if you want to be sober, you kind of have to be at a point in your life where you're ready. And I finally reached that point. You know, I'm 32 years old. And I was like, I have wasted the last 4 years of my life in rehab and drinking. So let's do something about it. And mm-hmm. I made that conscious decision and I've been doing really well.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll circle back to this at various points because I'm sure people, you know, are really interested in your story. And, you know,
right.
I'm sure lots of people have family members and friends that and even maybe even people listening to the podcast themselves who are dealing with those types of issues. And I'm sure that you have a lot of stuff that can help people. What are you up to now back in Utah?
Well, I just moved back here about a month ago. So I'm freezing because mm-hmm. I came from Orlando. I am the head server at a sushi restaurant that just opened up.
Yes.
And yeah, just kind of living my daily life.
Yeah. Well, we were in Utah over the summer. We got to see Jonas and Nalia and Rick and, of course, Tyson and Rachel. And Jonas is out of the sushi game. So it only, you know, somebody had to take his place.
Someone had to jump in, and that was me. I know, like, I saw pictures of when you were here, and I was like, man, I wish I was there. And then, of course, I come back, like, a month later. But I'm sure you'll be back at some point.
Yeah, we had a great time. Anyway, so let's get into a little bit of Survivor 35, because I really am feeling like this season is starting to kick into gear. I know that a lot of people had said that it was slow, but I feel like that there's a lot of momentum now coming into the merge part of the game. How have you been feeling about the season?
You know, I'm on board with what people were saying where it was started. It did start quite slow. And I was having a hard time really rooting for some people in specific. And finally, I am getting on board with the people that are in the game and how the game is being played. It's completely different than other seasons. You know, I feel like a lot of people are running around like they don't know what they're doing, but it's starting to get interesting.
Okay.
That's for sure.
All right. Well, who is it in particular that you feel like that you are rooting for?
I like Lauren.
Lauren.
Yeah, I really do. I don't know why. I think it's because, she's just like, she's like a tough bitch, you know, it's like, you don't mess with her. I can just literally picture her on a fishing boat, you know, drinking a Coors Light and yelling at people to do their job and playing softball. I can also see that very, very well. I mean, she just screams it. I was kind of surprised to find out that she has a daughter. But I like her. I like her personality. I think she's funny. She's dry. And she kind of seems like she knows what she's doing. I also like Ryan, because I feel like he is as if me and Courtney Yates had a baby.
Mm-hmm.
That's him. And he's just one of those, you know, little weasels that is doing a pretty good job at the game.
Yeah. Well, I think that people have made a lot of Todd comparisons as one. You know, he gets Cochran, he gets you, but he mm-hmm. actually put in his bio, you know, which survivor do you want to most play like? Who is your inspiration? And he said Todd Herzog.
I saw that and I was like, all right, buddy, if you're going to say that, let's see how you play this game.
Yeah.
So, and he's not letting me down. So I'm happy with him. I think he's doing a really good job.
Yeah. He has, I think, been really good, especially here in the merge, because I think that coming into the season, I thought maybe, OK, he's going to try to be the villain and he's going to come across as being like a weasel. But I think that he has really isolated all of that to the confessional. And I think that was something that you were able to do well, whereas all the players in the game seem to really like him.
Yeah, you know, he's doing a very good job socially. When he started off his game, as he looks like he wouldn't be a physical threat, but he was doing very well in the challenges. I was like, you get it, you little like 80-pound thing. But yeah, I mean, he's crushing it. And I'm sorry, but he was the first one last night to actually think, let me get rid of the plate instead of like cover it up with a napkin. I was like, it's things like that in the game of Survivor that you need to be aware of.
Yeah. That was very exciting to have that reward play out the way that it did with that one plate of spaghetti. Did you like how Survivor did that? Did you like that idea for a twist?
You know, if I was in the game, I would have been pissed. But I thought it was a very clever idea because, I mean, we've seen how much Cole eats back at camp. And I thought it was funny how, you know, there was noodles left, but did you notice that, like, all the meat and sauce was gone by the last two people? I was like, this is, you know, so you're going to make it look like there's still food left, but you're going to go ahead and eat all the meat and sauce. But I mean, I don't know what I would have done. I think I would have done a pretty good job at sharing just because you don't want to have that target on your back. But they also put, you know, the biggest guys first, which seemed kind of stupid to me because, of course, they're going to eat more.
Now, we were debating this last night, Stephen and I, about what Joe did in terms of the order. And so I had watched the episode again on last night to see exactly how they came up with that order. I believe that Joe had to make up the order himself. So Joe put himself last and then he didn't get a chance at the immunity idol, which might have maybe changed things for the healers. How do you think that Joe should have approached that? Did he do the right thing because he was somebody who didn't play in the challenge in the first place?
I think so. I think he would have been really stupid to have put himself somewhere else in the order because he didn't participate in the challenge. He just got the luxury of being able to eat. As far as his gameplay, you know, and his idol signs, he probably should have been aware that there would be a clue and maybe should have thought about that ahead of time, you know, putting himself first. But I think if he would have gone before the other people, that it would have just painted a bigger target on him than he already has.
Mm-hmm. So that clue ultimately led the survivors back to the flagpost at camp. And of course, you know, fans of Survivor China know that there is some history to the immunity idol being hidden at the flagpost. Did you like that the idol returned to its natural China position?
You know, I enjoyed that it was right at camp because I know how difficult it is to get people away from like where everybody hangs out. And you try to be sneaky and you try to be like cool about it. But in the end, it's extremely difficult to, I mean, unless they waited till nighttime when everybody was sleeping. But even then, you know, someone's bound to be stirred.
Can you reset what you did for people that don't have a perfect recollection of all that from Survivor China? You had gotten the clue from Crazy Dave, right? And then was that enough information to be able to find the idol?
First, Leslie received the clue from Jamie, and then Leslie shared the clue with me, and then Crazy Dave gave me the next clue, and then James gave me the next clue, and that's when I figured out what it was. At my camp, it was like a big, giant square block that was posted on like this overhang.
Yes.
And the clues made it sound like it was a bat, and the carving had little tiny bats. So I was trying to take one of the little bats off, and then I realized it was the whole freaking plank.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what gave away, like, oh, I just found something important to Frosty, who was then on my team.
Right. And so then you came up with a plan that you wanted, that James had switched over to John Hu at that point. And then you gave him an idol in order to have him throw a challenge. But then ultimately, then Denise couldn't eat the balut egg. And that's why ultimately, then you guys had to go and vote off Sharia. I have all that correct?
You are correct. Yes. Okay.
So, but I think that and why I bring this up, in addition to the idol being hidden at the flagpole, I do think that there was some precedent for what's gone on in this season about passing advantages between the tribes pre-merge that I think creates some fun situations. Like in this season about how that, between Ryan and Chrissy, and then the idea of where Jessica planted the take a vote away from Devin. And I think it's created some interesting situations.
I think it's awesome, to be honest with you, because it is kind of creating these secret alliances and secret like hatreds between people when they're not even on the same tribe, knowing that they're going to be merged and be together and see what can happen, which I think saves us from, you know, terrible situations of let's just pick off one complete tribe, even though that's kind of what they're doing right now with the healers. But we've got an interesting alliance between a hero and a hustler because of the Chrissy and Ryan thing from episode one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the heroes and the hustlers are together, and now they're picking off a bunch of these healers. Last night, that big group, the hustlers, had to decide, should they get rid of Joe or should they get rid of Desi? And they ultimately went with Desi, which I was a little surprised by. Did you have any thoughts on that being the right decision?
I was very surprised. I really like Desi. I think that's the main reason why I was surprised, because I thought she was a fantastic player. If I was in the game and I take a step back and look at it, Desi is a more physical threat, so that makes sense. And everybody already dislikes Joe, so that makes sense. But he's been proven to be kind of like an idle hog, so that's scary. But at this point in the game, you do want to get rid of the physical threats, so Desi makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I was disappointed because I really liked her, and you know Joe's irritating, but to me, he's Tony 2.0.
Yeah.
And
is that
I'm
a good thing?
Sure that it's to me, it's annoying. Like we already had Tony twice, and we don't need another Tony. We need, you know, I like new and original players, which is hard to find, being that it's on season 35.
Yeah.
But I feel like it literally is almost identical gameplay to Tony, and it's like we already had a complete season of that. Let's get something new.
Now, is that shade on Tony, or is that you just don't want to see something that you've already seen before?
I don't think it's shade on Tony. I just don't need a repeat. It's like it would be almost as if they got another, you know, bearded guy wearing tie dye and tried to make a new Rupert. Like, we don't need that again. We've already had that.
Yeah. You know, I did a lot of reviewing of China today to get ready for this. I took this interview very seriously, Todd. And in my review of China, that I came across a not exactly similar situation, but you were faced with the decision of, do I get rid of a person who everybody seems to dislike, or do I get rid of a person who seems to be the bigger challenge threat moving forward, when you had to decide between getting rid of James or getting rid of John Robert? Again, not exactly the same. And of course, that those are both people that were in your original alliance. But ultimately, you decided that you felt like that the bigger threat was the person who was getting on everybody's nerves. And that was somebody that you felt like needed to go before the person that could potentially win immunities. Do you see that as similar at all?
It is very similar, actually. And this is where I just became a cocky little brat, and I got sick of Jean Robert coming up with ideas that I had had before him, mm-hmm. and then pretending that they were his own. So I was like, he's got to go. Like, he's pissing me off. So I'm going to turn it around on him, get rid of him. And what was never shown on TV was me and James had a deal that we were sharing the idols. So I was still under the impression like, oh, I could get an idol from James if I keep him around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But so, that deal changed, right?
Well, that deal changed when I figured me and Amanda decided, like, let's blindside him with both of them. Then nobody has an idol and it's like completely fair game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you think that, do you feel like you regret that decision? I mean, obviously you won and everything worked out, but do you feel like that if you were like grading yourself, do you feel like that the better move would have been to get rid of James at that point?
No. I mean, I really wouldn't change anything about the game because you said I won. But you know, who knows what kind of chaos Jean Robert could have caused in camp if we did get rid of James.
Right.
Because he wasn't loyal to anybody and he would flip-flop in a heartbeat. Whereas James, I knew, would stick with us.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't very social, where Jean Robert was only watching out for himself.
Do you see any difference between somebody like Jean Robert and somebody like Joe, where it seems as though Jean Robert was not trying to behave badly? Like he was, you know, saying a bunch of terrible things at different points during the season, but it didn't seem like that he was trying to do that strategically. Whereas we see somebody like Joe, who at times has said, I am going to intentionally get under people's skin as a strategic move, but it doesn't feel like that he is, he's just being who he is. And that's why he's insulting Ben for his service or trying to get Alan worked up at different points in the game. Do you see, is that anything that the other players treat a survivor differently?
Oh man. You know, Jean Robert, that's just him. Like he is loud, obnoxious. He loves himself and he can be annoying. Joe seems very similar in that sense. And part of me wonders if he realizes he screwed up by saying something. So he uses like, oh, this is part of my gameplay as an excuse to make it seem like he did it on purpose when he probably didn't. If that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, he may be, you know, doing all of that on purpose, but at the same time, it seems like he is all over the place and says something and then is like, oh yeah, that was on purpose. That's my gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
Because he doesn't really know what else to do. To me, it's almost like he watched Tony's season and was like, that's how I'm going to play. And then he went on the show and tried to mock it exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. Right. And there's only one Tony.
Exactly. There's only one Tony.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about Chrissy, and she's somebody else in this season who has done a really good job so far and is right there in terms of being in the mix to go all the way this season. Do you have thoughts on Chrissy?
Yes. Okay. So I have to applaud Chrissy's gameplay because she's doing a fantastic job. She has alliances in the right places. She's doing and saying the right thing. She was a target on day one. And now she seems to be controlling the game. I don't know why, but she bothers me.
Okay.
So I'm bugged by the fact that she probably is going to go all the way.
Yeah. So what is that? You can't put your finger on it, right? So
I wish I could. I really wish I could. But she is a super fan. So she's doing the right things. And I don't know. Maybe it's because, no, honestly, I don't know. You know how like sometimes people just rub you the wrong way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's how I feel about Chrissy.
I mean, and yeah, there is something where there have been, you know, people that have come off the show in exit interview, you know, talking about how, you know, I just didn't get a, you know, a great vibe from her. And we haven't seen a lot of people be, you know, super complimentary of her social game. I think that one of the things that she does is it seems like that she, you know, piles on a little bit at the tribal council.
Yeah, yeah, I would 100% agree with that. And it's almost like she has this this super cocky attitude. Like she knows she's running things from a distance, but I don't know. She's just irritating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let me ask you something else about Chrissy. This is something that one of our listeners, a great friend of the podcast, Antonio Mazzaro, tweeted to me earlier today. Rob, I think you sold Chrissy short on her reaction to the tribe flag idol. She created a distraction that forced Cole, his words, into a bad bluff and gave Ryan full cover. No other reason to shout for help. She knew the idol was already claimed. So how did you read what went on at the tribe flag after Ryan ended up pulling it out of the dirt? Or sand?
When Chrissy and Cole were like still like going at it?
Yes. Did you feel like that? Did Chrissy, because I had said last night, I thought that she should have been creating a diversion for Ryan rather than going over there and calling attention to what was going on. Antonio is saying that no, she actually played it perfectly because her digging there was intentional to make Cole think the idol was still in there. I went back and I watched the scene again. I think that she didn't hear Ryan when he said, "I got it." And then he said to her, you know, cover that up. And then he walked away. I think that the communication between them wasn't crystal clear.
I agree with you. I feel like she heard him say, "Cover that up," thinking like, oh, he didn't get it yet. And then she saw Cole going at it and she panicked and was like, oh, I have to go for it too. And then they just went crazy together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he did say, "I got it," but I don't know if necessarily if either A, she didn't hear him, or B, you know, "I got it" could mean like I've got the situation covered, but not necessarily I have the idol. So I don't know.
If she did go through the process of thinking like I'm going to continue to dig to make it look like it hasn't been found and hopefully then people will think Cole found it, like if that went through her head, good for her. You know, like that's pretty impressive. But in that kind of a situation, it seemed like overall panic. The whole tribe was then staring. Nobody saw that Ryan had it, which was awesome. And now people think Cole has it, which puts a target on his back more than anybody else's.
Yeah. It all played out really great for that group. I just don't know how much of this was just premeditated and how much of this it all just worked out well for them.
I think it just worked out well for them. I don't think it was premeditated, to be honest.
Yeah. So the other advantage in the episode last night was what was going on with Lauren. And then she had the opportunity to get this extra vote if she decided not to vote at this tribal council. I know you are a big Lauren fan. Did you like how she handled everything with this, Todd?
Yeah, I did, because when Ben was telling her what to do with the votes, and she finally was like, "It's not going to be split. Like, this is just how it is. I'm going to use this advantage. And if you want one of us to go, then that's what's going to happen." And then she was like all super top secret at the voting urn. And I was like, you know, they probably can't see you, but she was like all like undercover with it. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised nobody noticed a missing vote.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. But now she gets to vote twice and that could be really big for her game.
Yeah. You know, Dalton Ross had asked Jeff Probst about this in his weekly interview about, you know, how come did nobody say anything and you guys edited it out of the show? And let me give you the answer that Jeff Probst said.
Oh, yes.
Cut out of editing. Are you nuts? We were hoping someone would notice and have it cause an issue back at camp. That was the risk Lauren was taking. But as you'll see in the next episode, barely a word was spoken. One reason for this was, and we felt safe trying this, is that expert Survivor fans know I don't always read the votes. I only read as many votes until we need to know the verdict. So if you have 8 votes and one player gets 5, it doesn't matter who the other 3 or 4, it's game over. That's what makes this an advantage we can use again. If you get lucky and play this advantage on a night there are extra votes, nobody would ever know. But that this was a night where all the votes were read and nobody said
anything.
Exactly.
And there was a tie.
Yeah. Yeah. I know it got confusing because we had 4 different people getting the votes, but I really was just very surprised that, you know, Chrissy or Ryan isn't sitting there saying like, hold on, isn't there another vote, Jeff? What happened?
That would have been awesome. But I mean, he does make sense with he doesn't always read all the votes if they're not necessary.
Sure.
And, you know, I think the only reason why it may not have been noticed was because of the random votes, you know, votes at the beginning for like Lauren and whatnot, where it was like, wait, what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe that's the only way or reason that, you know, Lauren got scared on that.
Yeah. So Lauren now moves forward with an extra vote, but she had to tell Ben. Do you think that she is at risk where Ben is going to tell other people about her extra vote, which could ultimately put a target on her back? We've certainly seen that before where a player has this type of advantage and then becomes a target for having it, with it's more of a danger than the benefit of having the extra vote.
You know, Ben is kind of a loose cannon. Like in the previews for next episode, it shows how Ryan tells both Devin and Ben about his idol.
Yeah.
And then it shows Ben telling Devin that Ryan has an idol, which he could also easily say, and Lauren has this advantage because he's just watching out for himself. So I would not be one bit surprised if he uses that against her, if it's going to benefit him to go further in the game.
Mm-hmm. Now, Todd, you played in a pretty classically themed season. You guys had idols, but not a ton of advantages or things like that, like we see in the modern game. Do you like all of these innovations, or do you prefer the game a little more simplified?
Yeah. You know, this is a question that I get asked a lot. I truly love classic Survivor, like what you played, what I played. And yes, there were some twists, but I love that. However, I 100% understand how the game has to evolve to keep people interested. And it keeps it exciting. I liked earlier on in this season how, like we had talked about how Ryan and Jessica had gotten those advantages and had to give them to someone else on the other tribes. I thought that was interesting. This don't vote and then get two votes thing is not my favorite, mm-hmm. but it could end up being good. It's just, to me, it's like, okay, woo. But we'll see if it works out in a good way. I also do get a little tired of there being like a million idols hidden throughout camp. You forget who has an idol. You forget who has two or three. You don't know if they've been played, and it's like, okay, what's happening?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it certainly makes the overall episode exciting. You have less votes that are sort of like, okay, this is going to be an open and shut case, but if there is a price that you pay for having all of that uncertainty, that creates a lot of confusion and a lot of explaining of all of the potential outs that could happen at a tribal council. And, you know, we do sometimes that comes at the expense of the story.
Exactly. Well, and one of the big things is it takes away from some of the genuine gameplay because, you know, yes, we consistently see blindside the tribal council, but a lot of it is due to the idols or the twists. And that takes away from some of the like actual relation gameplay that Survivor was known for from the beginning. It does keep the episode exciting and interesting. I mean, I won't lie, I enjoy it thoroughly. Like, I had no idea Desi was going to go last night, and it surprised me. Same with last week's vote. I didn't see that coming. But you know, it makes you have to stand back, like who got really lucky in this game and who actually played the game.
Yeah. You make a great point where without an idol being in play, you know, somebody goes home and it's because somebody was betrayed, which ultimately, you know, creates more action moving forward and more stakes in the season, as opposed to, you know, somebody gets idled out of the game. And it's still exciting. It was unpredictable. You didn't see that coming, but it's not necessarily something that creates ill will.
Exactly. It's kind of like, well, that was an interesting tribal council because we didn't see it coming, but it all happened because of this.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, at the same time, you can also have situations that are created because of people trying to split the vote because they're trying to flush an idol and then only one person needs to, you know, change their vote around, like JT ended up doing in the pre-merge in Heroes versus Villains. So, you know, the idols can also force this issue as well. So, again, there's, you know, a silver lining and a flip side of everything.
Yeah, completely. You know, I feel like a lot of the time the show could be boring without idols. So they are necessary. Sometimes it's a little bit too much, mm-hmm. but it does keep it interesting. And like the splitting of the votes. Last night, I would have loved to seen the girls vote for Desi, the guys vote for Joe, and then all of a sudden, Ben get blindsided because they didn't split them right. You know, like that would have been awesome.
Mm-hmm. So last night we saw Cole in his first episode without Jessica, and then he goes on to win immunity, ends up being safe for this week. What did you think of the Cole and Jessica saga in this season?
Oh my.
Did you get Eric and Jamie vibes?
It's yes and no. I mean, except for they switched places because Jessica's the virgin.
Yes.
Eric was the virgin.
That's right.
You know, like, so they swapped a little bit, and he's got the curly hair and the great body, and so did Eric. And, I mean, there you go. Showmances are a bit ridiculous, especially when you only known each other for a few days. But, you know, they have been shown to work. Cole, you know, I love him and I hate him at the same time because he's really dumb, but he's very entertaining to me. Like, he's so dumb, but he's entertaining. And Jessica, she just is so naive about everything. Even in the game where she's like, I've got this and I'm going to keep it a secret. But then she goes and tells people and it's like, okay, like you really are stuck. Like are you born? Like, are you from Arkansas or Nebraska or something? Like in the sticks? I don't know, but it was interesting to watch, and it'll be interesting to see how Cole does the rest of the game, because I mean, yes, he's a physical threat, but if the people were smart, they'd keep him around because nobody likes him.
Right. I feel like that Cole is almost something that is like mucking up the works right now for the real infighting to start. Cause I feel like as long as Cole is in the game, he's kind of like the glue that's going to keep that Hurstler alliance together. And yeah. Once he is out of the mix, I feel like that alliance will start to eat each other before they target like the Dr. Mikes of the world.
Right. Yes, I totally agree with you. Because it's really interesting now that they've merged, who has become, you know, the people who are going to go far in the game. Mm-hmm. And it almost seems very obvious to me, like who the final five will be, because of the fact that they're not big physical threats, but they are good game players.
Okay. Who do you see as that final five?
I can see Ben, Chrissy, Lauren, Ryan, and, probably Mike.
Okay, so that's interesting, that final five to me, because I don't think I would have had it that way. Ben, Chrissy, Mike, Lauren, Ryan. I feel like I would sub out Lauren and Mike. I feel like I would have Devin in there, and I'm not sure who I would have as a fifth person.
Yeah, so you would have Ryan, Chrissy,
Ben.
And Devin.
And then I'm not sure.
I can see that.
Yeah. And Mike is
Devin
interesting.
Does have himself in a good spot.
Yeah. Mike is interesting as well. But I feel like that Joe could survive past the point where, you know, the healers start to eat at each other. But I feel like that there's no way that a Hustler or a hero goes home before Cole.
See, okay. Between Cole and Devin, it always seems like eighth place is always like a very physically fit younger male.
Mm-hmm. Eighth place.
And I can see eighth place. I don't know why, but I can see Cole or Devin being eighth place.
Yeah. That was Dave Johnson in Survivor of the Amazon.
Exactly.
Oh, wait, no, it was. I think that was Dina, but it was right around that time.
It was Frosty in my season. It was Jason Siska in Fans versus Favorites. I believe it was Ozzy somewhere. I mean, it's always somewhere similar, right around eighth place. Mm-hmm. You're going to get a young physically fit male because they're like, oh, shit, we're about to go, you know, close to the finals here. We can't have this person dominate in challenges. And it's like panic mode.
Yeah. I mean, people do get on a roll in terms of the challenges. I mean, if you go back to last season, you know, Brad Culpepper, I think, ends up winning the last four challenges in a row. So I do feel like that is, you're probably right that there's something to it where it's like you can start to see the light at the end of the tunnel where it's like, okay, let's say Cole wins the, and he didn't win last week, but say he won like the first two or three, or like even like a Joey Amazing in Worlds Apart ends up winning like the first three or four. It's like, okay, well, they're not going to win all of them. But then you're at the point around like seven or eight where it's like now the light is at the end of the tunnel. And it's like, well, they might start winning all of them.
And so it's like, we got to get rid of them.
We got to get rid of this person. Yeah. So an important thing to think about as we start to get down from, you know, sort of like an unmanageable number in 10 to where we can really start to figure out, you know, how it's going to shape up at like six and seven. So if you think that that's going to be the group of five, then how do you see that we get to that point?
I think as soon as Cole does not win immunity, he will be voted out.
Okay.
And then I can see people looking at JP as a threat. I mean, he's very quiet, but he's physically fit.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he almost won last night's immunity. And so I can see them wanting to get rid of him. And then the next biggest target becomes Devin, just because of his strength.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see the older people wanting to align. And Ryan already has his alliance in there with Chrissy, but he's also aligned with Devin. So unless Devin and Chrissy and Ryan team up with like Ben and try to get out Dr. Mike, then Mike can weasel his way in because he's pretty close with Ben and Chris. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that Dr. Mike has a shot at this thing? I mean, he seems like he is the healer that nobody is worried about. Plus, he has the idol and he has this relationship with Ben and Lauren.
I think he has the ability to go far. I don't know if he has the votes. But then again, we are now at the jury and we may get a whole bunch of healers on the jury.
Mm-hmm.
So if he can somehow manage to get there, the healers may be like, oh, wait, look, you know, and he's already close with Lauren and Ben, and that's a hero and a hustler. So if he got there, he very well could be.
He does have the thing going for him where nobody is worried about him winning immunity.
Exactly.
You know, he's the guy that they can always worry about later.
But here's the one tricky thing that people forget about immunities, especially when it's like still 10 people left in the game, is you're not looking at extreme physical challenges. You're looking at endurance. You're looking at puzzles. And it's not the big, strong guys that are going to win that always.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not until you get down to like the final six, five, where they become much more physical. And like right now, you're people like Ryan should be winning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so far, we've had two physical players end up winning the immunity. So we'll see
exactly
how big of a factor that ends up being. So we have this fake idol in the season where Chrissy has the fake idol. Now, obviously, you guys had an idol played. It wasn't necessarily a fake idol. It was just an object that Jamie believed was a real idol. I don't think that there was any sort of like a strategic benefit to it. Was there? Am I oversimplifying it?
So the item that she had, we had a total of four of those plaques at camp. And one of the four was the idol. But it had special writing on it, you know, that says, congratulations, you found the hidden immunity idol. So
for the real one,
that one was the real one. She noticed the real one was missing. And so she was like, oh, if I take one, maybe that's another idol. But if that was the case, then we'd have four idols just sitting at camp. And I don't even know what they are.
Mm-hmm.
So she played it and she learned quickly that it was not.
Yeah, it's a great moment. Everybody is cracking up.
It is
up.
A great moment.
Yeah, James is
when
dying.
When you threw it in the fire.
Yeah.
Epic.
Yeah. When James is even talking about how, you know, she's so stupid that she thinks it's an idol.
Yeah.
Although maybe that was bad karma for him.
Yeah, right.
Now, Todd, it's been so long since we've talked to you that we never even got to, you know, hear your thoughts on PG going back for the second chances. What was your reaction to all of that and the campaigning, which sent PG back to play again?
I was super excited to see PG play again. Mind you, she was so annoying out there. Like, I hated her. But in real life, I love her. Mm-hmm. And I was so excited that she got chosen to go back on the show. And then she went back on the show. And it was literally like she sat down and pooped her pants. And I was so disappointed and so frustrated because we didn't even get to see PG play. She just like curled up in a ball and expected it to be like it was 10 years ago. And it's like, no, PG, the game has evolved. You need to evolve as well.
You feel like that she wasn't proactive enough?
No, not even a little bit. She was trying to play the game like it used to be. Mm-hmm. But the game has changed.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to change with the game, you're not going to do well.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I'm trying to remember the exact circumstances about how she went out, but I'm surprised to hear you paint it that way.
I mean, if you really look at it, and people like Kimmy Kappenberg, she changed her gameplay from, you know, years and years and years ago to the way she was playing now, and she did fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
But PG, you know, she was stuck in her ways.
Mm-hmm.
And she started off in China very bossy and trying to get things done. And she basically did the same thing. And she started arguing with Abby Maria. And it just did not work in her favor.
Now, I think that a lot of people are going to be wondering about if you would potentially be interested in a return chance. You've always said that you would definitely be up for it. Has anything changed for you over the last couple of years?
Of course not. I would play again in a heartbeat.
Yeah. I mean, I think that your battle, is something that I think would also, you know, make you a more, you know, compelling choice if that was possible as a returnee, because it's, another part of your story.
You know, I mean, it is a part of my story, and I can get through anything I put my mind to. I wanted to be on Survivor when I was a child. I did it. I won it. I wanted finally to beat my addiction. And yes, it's something that I deal with all the time, you know, like, oh, I would sure love to drink tonight, but I know I can't. And I've overcome those demons. And, you know, I'm proven, like living proof that if you believe that you can do it, you can do it.
Mm-hmm. Because I think that you're in this interesting group of winners, of people like Earl and Yule and Danny, and I feel like people that, you know, had a great win and then for whatever reason have never had a chance to go back and do it again. But I think people are really just really interested in what that would look like.
I am interested in what it would look like.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like what I said with PG, you know, the game has evolved, and if I were to go play again and play the exact same way that I did in China, I would be the second person voted out. So I would have to evolve my game and play a completely different game.
Yeah.
If I were to go back. And I think that's part of just growing up as well. You know, my season was 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot has happened.
Yeah, 10 years ago, this fall.
Yeah.
We're coming up on the 10-year anniversary of your win next month.
Exactly, which is crazy. Absolutely crazy.
Yeah. And I think that you would be, you know, well situated for a return trip because you were so young when you won the first time that now you're in like the sweet spot of like, you know, people that are in their 30s. Like, it's like you have life experience under your belt, but, you know, you're not like at the point where any physical skills are diminishing. I mean, you'd be very dangerous, Todd.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you were dangerous the first time.
My benefit, honestly, is that a lot of the new people don't even know who I am.
Yeah.
You know, like, they don't have a clue who I am, but I know who they are because I still watch and study the game.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like when Sandra went back for Heroes versus Villains. It had been a long time since Pearl Island and people forgot.
Yeah.
You know,
now, I know you're very tight with Sandra. What did you think about her going back last season?
I love Sandra. Me and her are really good friends. I would have loved to have seen her gone further in Game Changers. I knew that she had a huge target on her back, you know, from the get-go, especially since there were only three winners and she was the two-time winner. there really was no chance of her being able to go far.
Mm-hmm.
And that was unfortunate. I would think that if there were more winners involved, she had the potential to go really far. But she just got dealt the wrong hand in that scenario.
Mm-hmm. Did she ask you for any advice before she went to play again, or does Sandra not need advice from anybody?
Sandra does not need advice from anybody.
Mm-hmm.
She knew that her chances of going to the end were very, very small this time around. I believe that Game Changers originally was going to have 6 winners.
Yeah.
But there were several who backed out.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is one of the reasons why it just kind of fell apart. I feel like Game Changers could have been a 10 times better of a season if it was a little bit more thought through with some of the players.
Todd, are most of the winners in, you know, pretty, you know, steady, regular communication that I feel like that the more than any other, like there's no other place that, you know, that is like the runners up aren't all tight, but do the winners that have, are you guys in like some sort of like a, you know, more regular contact than the other players in any other position?
You know, I'm in contact with quite a few of the winners, a lot. Like I'm really close with a lot of the winners. Like Rob is almost like a big brother to me.
Mm-hmm.
Which hey, is absolutely
I would
bizarre.
Never go on Big Brother.
he's crazy. Let's see, Natalie I've never ever actually even spoken to.
Mm-hmm.
The 20 Natalie, not
yes.
Natalie White.
Yes.
Nobody's
ever spoken to Natalie White.
I have. I used to hang out with her quite a bit, and then she disappeared off the face of the planet.
Yeah, she's missing. That'll be like a new serial podcast. Where's Natalie White?
Yeah, like where the hell did she go? I don't know. I think she went a little crazy. Who knows? She was engaged to like this absolutely insane person, and then they split, and she disappeared, and he went even more insane. I remember that much.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's not like a missing persons thing, is it?
I don't know.
Should we be alarmed?
She's just gone. We should probably, you know, put up one or like missing posters, like flyers around. Maybe milk carton status.
Yeah.
Who knows?
So, you're tight with a bunch of the winners. So here's my question.
Mm-hmm.
So a new person wins, you know, let's say Lauren wins season 35. Is there is it up to the new winner to reach out to the old winners, or do all of the old winners reach out to new said winner?
I would say it's a mix. To be honest with you, some of the older winners just don't care. I'll never forget, like when I first was on the show, the very first contestant to reach out to me was Eliza.
Mm-hmm.
And it like made my life. And so now once in a while, I'll, you know, send a message to people on the show and be like, welcome to the family, or like the new winner. I'm like, welcome to the winner's circle. It's kind of faded over the past 10 years, but I still try to do it, especially since, you know, we see each other around the country at different events and stuff. And I mean, who knows? We may play again someday. I don't want to be on their bad side.
I really think that that all winter season, Todd, that I've predicted that I think it'll happen. I think it's going to be really cutthroat.
Yeah, I can 100% see that. It's kind of horrifying to think about, but I mean, everybody wants to claim that title, you know,
mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to be the first one voted out in all winter season. Like that's just embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you kind of have to be cutthroat, and you have to sit back and think like, who are the biggest targets and who do I align with?
Yeah, no, I think it would be really a lot of fun. I feel like that of all of the ideas that get kicked around, I feel like that is just like the cleanest one that I think makes the most sense, especially where now you have so many people where, you know, it used to be, you know, you'd hear things like, well, you know, we don't think that, you know, necessarily like all the winners are necessarily super interesting. But now you have really, you know, a lot of different choices to go for all winter season.
Exactly. I mean, and you know, we're almost going to have 34 winners being Sandra's twice.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to pick. They don't have to take everybody, you know,
right.
Don't take your Natalie White. I mean, good luck.
Well, if they can find her,
you don't have to take her.
You don't know where she is.
I mean, really, who knows? Who knows?
Okay. Will they have to raise the prize money to get the winners back? Will the winners play again for $1 million, Todd?
I would. I mean, I would go back to play for the title.
Mm-hmm.
And the money, of course. But I guarantee you that a lot of the winners would be like, we want more money.
Yeah. Okay. Well, come down off your high horse, one percenters. Come on.
Like, it's something that like helped build your life. So if you can't go back to try to claim your title and show your gameplay for $1 million, then like, come on now.
You should strip them of the title, Todd.
I agree.
Okay. So I mentioned the Jamie Dugan playing the fake idol back in China. Chrissy has this fake idol, which is something that was laid out in the first episode. Do you see this being a strategic benefit to her at some point in the season? Or is it something that she just starts flashing when she gets to a certain point of like, hey, nobody vote for me. I've got an idol.
You know, that's the way I can see her doing it, is like, I've got an idol, so you can go ahead and vote for me if you want. What I would like to see happen is her find somebody that she wants to vote out and make a fake alliance with them and give them the idol and say that you're being voted for tonight, just so that they play it and get really, really stupid looking.
So you want everybody to get the Jamie Dugan?
I do. I really do. And I want Chrissy to have blood on her hands for it. I think that would be epic.
But at this point in time, isn't that something that really ends up pissing people off in the jury? Like, you end up, I mean, we saw with, Randy back in Gabon, although I guess he did end up voting for Bob, even though that Bob ended up giving him the fake idol to have him play it. So I guess people come around, but he was pretty salty about that.
You know, I mean, at the end of the day, the jury is either going to vote by gameplay, or they're going to vote by, you know, whether their feelings were hurt or not. And when they vote for whether their feelings were hurt or not, that pisses me off, because we signed up to play a game, people. And if you can't take a step back and look at that, then you shouldn't be playing in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, I mean, it always frustrates me when people get the sympathy vote, or they get the vote because, like, oh, you hurt my feelings, or oh, you lied to me. Like, yeah, this is a game for $1 million. You know, we're not playing checkers in the backyard on a Sunday afternoon. Like, come on.
Yeah. Okay. Todd, I have a lot of questions for you from the listeners of the podcast, and I want to start to get to those. Again, people were super excited that you were coming on the podcast this week, myself included.
I was excited to come back. You know, when you first asked me, I was like, of course I want to do this. And so we decided in November, because it's right after the merge.
Right after the merge. Good time to talk. All right. Autumn writes in to ask that there has been some talk about Survivor players nowadays just trying to find their right-hand man or woman instead of making a full alliance. As somebody who had a loyal partner in the game all the way to Final Tribal Council, what do you think about these duos becoming the new norm? Now, how would you classify what you had? Did you feel like that you had a duo with just Courtney? Did you feel like that you had a trio with Courtney and Amanda?
I believe that I had a trio with Courtney and Amanda. We call ourselves the Mean Girls.
Mm-hmm.
And like, me and Amanda would make the biggest decisions, and then me and Courtney were better friends.
Yeah.
So that little trio kind of worked. And then we like kind of included Denise, but she was like the Duff of the group. And you know, but she was there and she listened to what we had to say. So it's important to have the ones close to you, but then like your little sideline.
Yeah. Okay. So do you feel like that idea is still a one that would work well in an era when you potentially have to go through so many tribe swaps?
Oh, see, and that's really tricky. I do think it's important to have your one person that you feel like you can trust. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because the game gets very emotional and confusing, and you get paranoid and you need someone to talk to. It's kind of shown this season with Ryan and Devin, how they were very close and they split and then now they're back together. But that could be completely ruined next week with what Ryan talks about with his idol. So I think it is important, yes, but you need to, nowadays, you need to have, you know, multiple alliances in different places, but you have to know which ones are like your number one, number two, number three.
Yeah. Bob Marassa Jr. wants to ask you, does Todd think he would do better or worse in the new final tribal council format? Well, it would be hard for you to do better. Okay. So I guess the question is, what did you think of the reinvention of the tribal council format?
I think it's interesting. I like it. And personally, I think I would do very well in the new format. It's almost the same, just slightly different, you know, instead of standing up individually, it's the open panel type thing. I don't have a problem answering questions. I kind of wear my heart on my sleeve. And so I just try to be upfront, honest, and to the point.
Yeah. I mean, you really nailed it. I think that almost any Survivor fan gives you the credit for what you did in that final tribal council jury. It was really fun for me. I went back and I was listening to the last podcast that you and I did together, which was back in May of 2013. And it happened to be the final five, or we're going into the final five of Survivor Karamoan after a pretty classic episode in my mind when Dawn ends up not getting the family visit from Brenda. And we were talking through all of that. And we were discussing the question that you get from John Robert in that final tribal council. And it was funny because little did we know that there would be, you know, almost a similar moment where Malcolm comes up to Cochran and says, you know, why should I give you my vote? And it was like that Cochran took like the textbook, John Robert to Todd response and used it on Malcolm. And it was a similar reaction where Malcolm like came in really salty and then had that same reaction as John Robert. I was like, oh, okay. I guess that was a good answer, where that jujitsu, to be able to, here's a person who's angry with me, and flip it around to making them feel like that they are, this worthy adversary that you had to go to great lengths to be able to stop, because otherwise they would have won.
I mean, you know, you said it, not me. He can take all the credit he wants for it, but I was the first. No, sometimes you have to stroke alpha males' egos to make them understand that they're better when really they're not. And that's what I did with John Robert, and that's what Cochran did with Malcolm.
Yeah, but then I think you took it away at the reunion show when Jeff asked you, right?
I did.
Like, did you mean like, it, Todd, sorry, or were you just stroking his ego? It's like,
I wanted $1 million.
Okay. This is a question from Amy Cook, who wants to know, as someone who played in one of the most unique locations, how do you feel about production basically parking the show in Fiji? I feel like that China is really the last season that has like an iconic location. And I know that Survivor, you know, bounced around all over the place and played in, you know, Gabon and Tocantins, and had like they had a little bit of a look. But China, I feel like, is really distinct when you watch that season.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it kind of makes me sad to see it just stay in one location, because then we do get all of these themes that, you know, are kind of ridiculous. I understand why they have to do it. But at the same time, I miss the, you know, the uniqueness of the location and how they use the culture of the location in the game itself, and the rewards reflect that and stuff like that. That to me is the main thing I miss about them just staying in Fiji.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the kind of thing that I definitely miss getting to see, you know, all of the distinct environments, but I don't know if it's necessarily something that, stops me from enjoying the show. Like I had been saying for years that I feel like that they should just set up a Survivor Island like the Big Brother house, and then you just go to Survivor Island to go play. I think they need to like embrace it more of like that, you know, hey, all right, we're welcome back to Survivor Island, where, you know, like they need to like build up like the legend of where they are now, because now it's starting to like it's starting to like build up its own history that they're staying in the same place.
And it's, you know, it looks like that's exactly what it's going to be doing, is like making a home there. So I agree with you. If they're going to stay there, embrace
it. Steer into it.
And yeah, like just own that fact instead of, I mean, like Heroes versus Hustlers versus, I can't even say it.
Yeah.
Like the title of the season to me pisses me off in the first place. So it's like, I get it that you need to come up with some sort of like gimmick with it. But like you said, to me, as long as the cast is good and we've got characters and we've got good gameplay, it doesn't necessarily matter where they are.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Edward Morris wants to know, Todd, what move would you have made if you saw the plate with the clue?
Well, I'd like to think that I would get rid of the plate.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to honestly put myself in that situation and think like, okay, what would I have done? I probably would have tried to scratch it off.
Yeah. It was interesting to see, you know, the different players try to cover it up between the napkin and then Ryan ultimately hiding the plate. I thought that was very fun.
I thought so too. I mean, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I would probably have to be in the situation to before I would understand what I would do or not.
Mm-hmm. Todd, was the player getting to eat as much spaghetti as they want and being able to control those portions? Was that anything like you guys deciding to eat the sandwiches that we're going to go back to? Was it PG and Amanda?
That was my idea to eat them. I was freaking hungry still. We were just on the plane on our way back, and I was like, I'm eating this. And Denise ate it too, and then she wanted to turn on me, which was her playing the game, but I didn't really care because I was so hungry.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Nick wants to know, so glad to have you. You had some really funny impersonations in China. Do you have any for other Survivor players, Todd, that you did some impressions in Survivor China? Do you do any other Survivor impressions?
Oh, when I'm around Sandra, I can do Sandra on point.
You need to hear it.
I can't do it right here. Like, I have to listen to her for a second, and then I can do it. Let me think. Okay. She called me up one night, and I was like, hello. And she's like, hey, player, do you got the Walmart by you? Like, yeah, I've got the Walmart by me. Why? And she's like, you got to go. They got towels on sale for $2.50. Like, okay. She's like, I got to go. I'm making lasagna for Tati. Bye. She's crazy. She's the best.
Is she like a spokesperson for Walmart? Why does she need to get you to buy the towels at Walmart?
She is the biggest couponer I've ever met in my entire life. Sandra, the $2 million queen of Survivor, cuts out coupons every Sunday.
That's how she keeps it.
She buys like 50 things of toothpaste for 50 cents each, and it's because it's on sale. No, I mean, if I'm around someone long enough, or even for like 20 minutes, I just start to like mock them in my head. It's really hard to do like on the spot, but then I'll do it without even realizing I'm doing it. It's one of the things I get from my mom. She does it too. It can get kind of bad, kind of dangerous, because some people don't like to be made fun of.
Todd, I can relate to everything you're saying right now. That I definitely like, if I hear somebody long enough, a lot of times, like, it's just like I can pick up on like a cadence and a voice. And yeah, people don't love it.
They don't love it. Nope. But it is what it is. Like Fabio. Oh, I remember one night I was mocking him and he did not like that.
Yeah. So you were around Fabio in person and you were doing impressions of him and he got pissed?
Yeah, well, because he also tried to tell me that there was some sort of deformity in my brain when I was being born that made me gay. And I was like, okay, listen, buddy. Like, here we go. So.
Wait, Fabio doesn't have all the answers, Todd?
He may. He may. You know, he may. Oh, poor Fabio. He's gone through some crazy stuff himself.
Yeah.
We've since made up.
And he's doing okay?
On good terms now. He's been better, but he's doing okay.
Okay. Do other survivors reach out to you now if they're dealing with any sort of like personal issues after everything that you've been through?
Yes.
Okay. And you are and you welcome it, or is it like, hey, like I got my own problems, everybody?
Oh, of course I welcome it. I mean, you probably know, you know, a lot of people in the reality TV world are crazy partiers or have addiction issues. And not all of them are very public about it. Some of us have been. But if I can help in any way, shape, or form, because I understand, I'm going to help. And it's not just contestants either. It's people as well.
Yeah. Nobody has ever reached out to me about anything, Todd.
Please, Rob.
People do not feel like I have any helpful advice.
Please.
They don't. They don't, Todd. but no. So do you have for anybody who is listening who you know is having issues with a loved one or even themselves, like what would you, do you have one message, or is it like different for everybody?
I don't have like a copy and paste message. Usually I'll get messages through Facebook. While I was in treatment, I actually got hundreds and hundreds of letters in the mail, and I wrote every single person back, handwritten letter. But on Facebook, I try to read them and I reply. Sometimes it's a longer reply. Sometimes it's a shorter reply. A lot of people do ask like, hey, can you call Dr. Phil and see if he can get me on the show? I don't have that. I don't have Dr. Phil's number.
Right.
I'm not the one who contacted the show in the first place. But I give him whatever little advice I may have.
You said earlier in the podcast that you didn't really believe or agree with the intervention method. Are you talking specifically about going on TV for the, the treatment that you ended up receiving? Or do you feel like that an intervention is not a great idea for somebody who's battling an addiction?
Unless they're about to die, intervention's not going to work. I've had interventions that weren't on television as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, like, if someone doesn't want to stop, they're not going to stop.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter how long you put them away for. You know, I went to rehab for 90 days at a time, and you're locked away from the world with no TV, no phone, no internet. You're just there, and you're learning stuff and going through classes and stuff like that. And sure, it's great. To me, I call it summer camp for drug addicts, and it was a lot of fun. But until you're ready to stop, you're not going to stop. Like there were several times I got out of treatment and went straight to drinking because I was like, finally, I get to drink again.
Yeah. Why was it fun? What was fun about it?
About rehab?
Yeah.
To me, I'm not going to lie. Addicts and alcoholics are some of the greatest people you'll ever meet in your entire life. There are stories to be told. So like when I was down in South Padre Island, there's 40 to 50 guys in this place where we're across the street from the beach. We hang out, we laugh, we joke, we go to these classes and like, listen to that crap. But then we would just hang out. And it was like literally summer camp for drug addicts. We had a pool, good food. Just, it was fun.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. It's like, sleepaway camp.
Yeah, literally.
You don't have to go to work.
Of course, Dr. Phil sends you. Yeah, Dr. Phil sent me to like super, super nice places too. So I'm like chilling at like the, five-star resort for 90 days doing like going to the beach and swimming with dolphins. I'm not going to really complain about that.
Yeah. So what can somebody do if they have a loved one who is dealing with any type of addiction issue? Are you saying that there's nothing that they can do until they get to a bad enough place where the person wants to change?
In my opinion, honestly, no. You can try. You can talk to them all you want. But it's not going to do anything. The person has to, first of all, I would at least introduce them to someone who's been through it. because talking with someone else who gets it is the only way that I was ever able to like relate in the first place. You know, and to understand like, wait a second, I felt that exact same way too, where I didn't think I had a problem. The rest of the world could see it, but I couldn't. You know, in my mind, I was completely functioning and able to go. But then looking at pictures and seeing like footage and stuff, I'm like, oh my gosh, that is a hot mess right there. Like, and I didn't see it.
Yeah. This is a question from Alex Isaac, who wants to ask you, does Todd ever regret winning Survivor based on the trajectory that he ended up taking? I mean, I don't get the sense that you do, but have you ever thought about that of, you know, because you have said that you started drinking, you would go to these parties, it was because of Survivor. Did you ever?
Oh, no, I do not blame Survivor for it.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
I started drinking before I was on Survivor. Only a several months before Survivor, because I was 22 when I started drinking. But I was uneducated completely about alcoholism and addiction. And when I was 24, I mean, I had been drinking socially for 2 years then, but when I was in 24, I got into a relationship with an alcoholic, but I didn't know what an alcoholic was.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of joined in on the drinking rather than, you know, being aware like, oh, wait, that's not normal. It's not normal to drink 30 beers a night. Like to me, I was like, oh, this is what people outside of Utah do, which, I mean, that just shows how naive I was.
Yeah.
So no, I do not blame Survivor one bit for my drinking. I feel like Dr. Phil kind of portrayed it that way.
Yes.
But not even a little bit.
Okay. I know a lot of people want to know, who from China do you still keep in contact with?
Well, definitely Courtney.
Mm-hmm.
And Jamie and Eric. I saw Jamie, Eric, Leslie, PG, and Courtney and Denise this August. I'll talk to Frosty on like Instagram once in a while. Other than that, I don't really talk to anybody.
Okay. No John Robert.
No John Robert. Not for a long time now.
Yeah. Okay. This is a question from Will from America, who says a lot of people were comparing Lauren to a lunch lady Denise preseason. So I want to know if Todd sees any merit to that comparison and how her perception has changed. Also, what about Lauren makes her a better player and more popular with the fans than Denise was? I'll put an asterisk there because Denise is a super popular player with the fans.
So when I first saw Lauren, my first comparison was Denise. I was like, oh my gosh, it's Denise. That's just me stereotyping, which I always say I hate, but I do it too. So I cannot really judge. But as the game is gone, I feel like Lauren is more confident with herself. Whereas
right.
Denise was more passive aggressive. Lauren is more assertive and she is more headstrong in the game than Denise was.
Mm-hmm. Right. I felt like that Denise, a lot of her game was sort of like, hey, everybody should feel bad for me. That's why I should ultimately win the game. I don't get that from Lauren.
No, Lauren is playing a game. Denise wanted to be carried through the game.
Mm-hmm. And I got the sense from Lauren where I said last night, I wasn't sure if she should have taken the advantage. I think that Lauren to me seems like that she's at least being proactive about, hey, I have this amazing opportunity. I'm on Survivor. I'm at the final 11. I have an opportunity to change the life of my family and I'm going to, you know, go and try to, you know, grab that ring while I'm here.
Yes. Yes. I agree with you. And I feel like if she keeps playing her cards right and she sticks around, she could be a fan favorite. I feel like she has that potential. Then again, you know, if this twist backfires, it could be the end of her game, period.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that there's anything to the popularity of Lauren in that it does not feel like she is trying to be popular, but instead that she is just being Lauren?
I think so. I really do. I feel like people are seeing a real side of her where it seems like other people like Joe, are trying to be a character, where Lauren is just being herself, and herself is kind of a character, and it's working.
Yeah. I think that not trying is the new trying hard.
I completely agree.
I think so. I mean, cause did you keep up with Big Brother this summer?
I did, yes.
Yeah, I feel like in the same way that Cody had that to some degree, I feel like that's what is resonating with Lauren, with people that are really gung-ho on Lauren.
Yes, I completely agree.
You know, she is who she is, and she's just like wearing it on her sleeve.
She's like, this is what it is. Like, all right, I bleached my tips. What?
Okay. Question from John Tinkham. You're known for having one of, if not the best, final Tribal Council showings ever. With Chrissy seemingly being disliked in the game by many, what do you think her best course of action would be going forward to get herself enough votes if she makes it to Final Tribal, especially knowing that she'll have to turn on several people to get here? You know, we've talked about this a lot this season with Chrissy of, is she on this trajectory where she will get to the Final Tribal Council and then be dealing with an angry jury and lose in the Final Tribal Council? Or do you think that, is there a possibility where she can pivot and then get people to respect her game should she get to the Final Tribal Council? Because I think by all accounts, I think most of our fans would agree, she's actually playing a good game, but she just does not seem to be, you know, you said it yourself, that there's something that feels off about her.
I don't know why. Like, as you were saying that, I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I hope she screws up at Final Tribal Council and doesn't win. Like, but then again, I'm like, Todd, why do you feel like that when she actually is playing a good game? It all depends on who she turns on to get to the final three, if she makes it there. It all depends on if she, I feel like there are some people who are going to vote out of like their feelings being hurt. And I feel like there are some people who will vote about it being a game. If she goes strong at the Final Tribal Council of like, I played a game and this is exactly what I did, she could, you know, win those votes. But if she goes in trying to apologize, I don't think that will go over well.
Yeah. Well, the apology tour is never going to work. That is there anything that, like, should she be trying to, you know, sow any seeds at this point in the game to be able to be set up to ultimately win?
Oh, man. Part of me thinks that so many people don't like her from the game because she's playing the game well.
Mm-hmm.
And they're jealous. Like,
yeah.
Oh, I should have done that. That's kind of the feeling I'm getting. And so I think she's doing a pretty good job at owning what she's doing. She's doing a good job at it.
If I had to put my finger on what her issue has been, I think that she ends up being in this middle ground where she's not somebody who is, you know, publicly coming out and saying, hey, I'm going after you. You're my target. You're who I'm going for. But she's also not doing a good job of, you know, keeping her intentions completely secret. So I feel like that she's maybe coming across as inauthentic to some of the people that are out there in the game. For instance, like, she is not directly targeting them, but people hear her whispering about things, and she's like not doing a good job of keeping her scheming a secret, where we've seen her like trying to conspire with Ben, and Ben is like, hey, is this a good idea? We're out here. The same thing with Ryan, where Cole is saying, hey, I can hear you whispering. I know you must be whispering about this idol clue. And it makes him feel like, okay, you're up to something, but you're not just being direct with me in terms of that you're coming for me. And you're also not doing a convincing job of making me think that you're my friend, and then stabbing me in the back. And it ends up being sort of like a neither, you know, fish nor fowl approach.
You know, when you said she comes off as inauthentic to these people. I'm like, you know what? She's coming off as inauthentic in general to the people who are watching. I honestly don't know a single person that's watching that's like, yeah, Chrissy, go.
No, and people are. I don't want to make a blanket statement, but I do think that the thing that you're talking about where that you can't exactly put your finger on, I feel like that's what it is. And I feel like that she needs to sort of like, you know, pick a direction more and not be in this gray area where, you know, it's one thing. And again, I think this is something that's more of a challenge for a woman playing the game that ends up being for a man to play the game. But, you know, the cases of like a Suri and a Sandra and people who are like, you know, really owning being the gangster out there, I think it's not a gray area.
Okay. You know what? I think, okay, this is what I'm thinking. If I look back to even when Sarah won, she was very good at playing this game, but like doing it without being, you know, sorry about it. Chrissy is doing it in a very, like you said, like I'm trying to be sneaky, but not too sneaky, but a little bit quiet so that people don't look at me that much. Mm-hmm. And it's like, maybe that's what it is that bugs me. But like you said, don't be in a gray area, go one way or the other.
Right. And I think Sarah is probably a better example because she's somebody who she did a better job of making everybody think that she was with them. And so people love Sarah. She made everybody feel like that she was their number one, but she was still being, you know, that gangster behind everybody's back. And so she did not make, you know, like leave people with the impression that she was actually being inauthentic with them. Everybody believed Sarah was being authentic with them.
Exactly.
I think that this was the problem that Amanda had where, you know, that people were going out of the game and she was trying to make them feel like that. No, she was still with them. And then, you know, in the final tribal council, people are saying to her, like, well, why did you tell me that we were good when we weren't good?
Yeah. I mean, poor Amanda. She plays a great game, but then final tribal council, she just loses it. She proved that in China and fans versus favorites.
Mm-hmm.
And then she like you said, tries to make people still feel like, hey, you're my buddy, but it's like, you just voted them out. They're sitting right there. You need to show them why you deserve to win. Not like, let's be buddy, buddy, instead of this is why I play the game.
And, you know, I'm feeling like these players that are coming out of the game are feeling like I knew Chrissy was, you know, coming to get me. I knew that she was targeting me, but I felt like that, you know, she may have not been, you know, direct or up front with these players in talking about this, where maybe they, you know, have a better sense of like, okay, that she was at least open with me. I think then she's like, I knew she was targeting me, but she acted like she wasn't.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. No, I mean, I was just thinking while you were talking, I was like, we really may have our like first Vesepia in a long time.
Interesting.
And you know what I mean? Like she's playing kind of similar to Vesepia where it's like kind of playing, kind of not playing, but like, I don't know. And then the blame gets put on her once the people are voted out. So I don't know.
But see, and I don't even think that there's any part of her that's kind of not playing. I think that she's just not doing a great job of, you know, convincing people that she isn't pulling the strings.
Okay, that's the best way to put it right there, what you just said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're right.
So it's a little bit of like a denial of, you know, what's happening out there. It's like, what are you guys talking about? I'm not responsible for this. You're crazy.
When she really should probably be owning more of it, especially if she wants to get any kind of respect for the gameplay if she makes it to the end.
Yeah. Okay. I know that we've talked Chrissy to death, but I think it's been one of the storylines of this season of here's somebody who is, you know, playing a, you know, a really strong game. But, you know, at the same time, why are people like coming away from the season with the impression of, you know, I didn't like how that went down?
again, I think it might be jealousy, because if you look back to the very first episode,
don't hate the player, hate the game.
Yeah. Like, she was a target on episode one, and, you know, Ryan gave her that little necklace, and I mean, it could all be foreshadowing, because now she is coming back in this game strong, and she is building herself in a very good alliance and position.
No, I think you make a good point, because just as like tying it back into, you know, not going on the apology tour, I think that her attitude, you know, should be more along the lines of suck it up, Buttercup. Chrissy's here.
100%. It kind of reminds me of Aubrey's edit. From her first time around, where she was broken at the beginning, and then she just became this strong, dominant player as the season went on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll see. Still a lot of time left to go in this season. This is a question from Will A. Todd used clues and idols to his advantage without ever having the idol for himself. What would he do in the game today with all of the advantages around every corner? Search for one to not get surreed, or use the same strategy to make others targets?
This is very interesting, because, I mean, that having the idols can be either really, really good for you or really, really bad for you, or both. I would definitely look for them. I would definitely look for clues, and I would definitely try to plant false evidence of idols being on other people. I would not be afraid to lie and say, like, so-and-so told me they have an idol. They're very dangerous. Blah, blah, blah. Let's flesh it out and actually just blindside the person. I also wouldn't want to be that person that's off running through the woods searching for an idol, because that's what people tend to like seem to do. And usually those people get like fourth place, and that is not what I would want.
Mm-hmm.
So I think having the idol, and I mean, kind of like what I did with James, I found the idol, I gave it to James, and then I told everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so he became a huge, huge threat. And our only way to get rid of him is to blindside him. So in that kind of situation, if I was able to do that again, absolutely I would.
Yeah.
If I found an idol and had to use it myself, you bet your ass I would do it.
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting sort of cat's paw strategy of, I'm not going to go for the idols or advantages, or maybe the ones that are public. I'd rather sort of force them onto other people and just know the locations of them, and then direct the heat towards those other players where I know they have those advantages.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a sneaky way to go about things, but I already do not come off as a physical threat. I can't come off as an extremely strategic threat by also having an idol in my pocket. So if I let other people know that someone that's already a physical threat has an idol in their pocket, even if they don't, please, I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. There's a question for you. This is from Jason Arick. I want to thank Todd for helping me find RHAP. I started watching Survivor in spring 2013. I already love the podcast. And that summer, while binging seasons, I Googled Survivor podcasts. I finished China and wanted to hear from the winner of my favorite season. I remember listening to it on my computer, having no idea who Rob was. Thank you, Todd. I'm forever grateful for guiding me to this great community. All right, Todd, thank you for that.
Well, you are so very welcome. What's his name?
This is from Jason.
Jason, you're very welcome.
Yes. Okay. Todd, this is a question that is from Tyler Lyons, who says, Todd, you were the last LGBT winner of Survivor, and that was 20 seasons ago. Why do you think this is? A shift in casting or just circumstance?
I mean, I don't know.
You don't have the answer to that, Todd?
I mean, you know, the gays didn't come out to play for a couple of years. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Please, I really don't know. I never attribute to winning to the fact that I'm gay.
Yes.
I just am.
But you don't root against the new gay players, right?
No, absolutely not. Like, yes, I don't necessarily root for or against gay players. I root for the person I find most interesting.
Okay. All right. This is a question from Felipe. It's been 10 years since China. How does Todd feel about his place in Survivor history, either as a strategist or a fantastic personality in that amazing season?
Oh, man. honestly, I'm just super grateful to be part of the Survivor family. I lived my dream by being able to play, and I am grateful that people enjoyed watching my gameplay. And that some people have, you know, built their gameplay off of me. I watched you play back in Amazon when I was in high school, and I loved your gameplay. So mm-hmm. It's kind of one of those things where we learn and we grow, and then someday we all meet each other and we become friends and we're all on the show together. You know, it's like some crazy, weird Twilight Zone. Yes, I would love to play again. Who knows if I would play really well, if I'd be really terrible at the game. I don't think you'd be terrible. Oh, well, thank you.
Yes. Yes. And happy that high school Todd was able to watch me, and current Todd is able to make me feel old today.
Please. Current Todd is old today.
I know.
Like, good Lord, I'm in my 30s.
Todd, what is your casting story? I don't know if I ever heard that in terms of how you got on the show.
So I auditioned 3 times. The second time I made it to semifinals. That was for Fiji, and then I got cut. And then the third time I auditioned, I sent in a videotape of me right after work as a flight attendant, and I was getting ready to go to a concert that night. So I was changing out of my flight attendant gear, and I put on like skinny jeans and like a super deep V. And I was like, this is exactly how I'm going to play the game. 2 sides. You're going to see the nice guy and the bad guy and blah, blah, blah. And then, I skipped right over semifinals and went to finals, and, met, you know, Mark Burnett and Jeff Probst and Lynn Spillman, and did that whole crazy 8-day casting experience in LA. And they did not like who they had at finals, told me that I was 97% yes, but told me 2 weeks before I actually went to China that I made the show.
Okay, so you feel like that they were on the fence as to whether or not they wanted you in the final cast?
They gave me all my shots.
Yeah.
And they had me mailing all the clothes and stuff in, but they didn't have a confirmed lockdown cast. So I think that they wanted me, but they didn't want to say yes just in case. I don't really know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You never know in terms of like how they put that final puzzle together in terms of what they're thinking. This is a question that's from Matt Price. Todd is always talked about as someone who nailed down the game at the final tribal council. What's the surest way to lose in the final tribal council? What's a mistake that you see people making?
And let's say the biggest mistake.
We'll take apologies off the table.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I was going to say apologizing, sitting there and saying, I'm sorry. I think another big mistake is letting people know what you're going to do with the money.
Mm-hmm. What should you say? How should you answer that?
What you're going to do with the money?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I was asked that question at our tribal council, and I said, I'm going to travel the world. I'm going to buy my mom a car. I'm going to buy myself a car, and I'm going to buy a bunch of DVDs. That's what I said. Mm-hmm. I was honest with it.
Yeah.
And Amanda answered something like, I'm going to donate to charity and I'm going to do this. And people don't want to hear that. Like, okay, now you're just,
that's counterintuitive.
It absolutely is. Like,
but you're saying that she was too pageanty with it.
She was extremely pageanty. Yes, that's the best way to put it. You know, she was like, I love children and I'm going to donate to this. And it's like, listen, girl, we all know exactly what you're going to do. Like, stop. Yeah. You're going to go buy a bunch of shoes and you're going to go move to LA and you're going to make yourself a calendar and you're going to try to sell that calendar. Like, come on now.
So she relied too much on the Miss Montana stuff.
Yeah, and it did not work. to me, another thing that I feel like is the biggest cop out in the final tribal council is playing the family sob story. However, it did work for Jeremy, and in a way it worked for Adam. I don't feel like that should be brought into the game, or at least the final tribal council. But then again, it worked for them.
Yeah.
So
Well,
I can't really say that's a bad strategy.
I would argue with both of those guys that I don't know necessarily if that was necessarily why people voted for them over the other people. I mean, in both those cases, it was a 10-0 vote. And like had those votes been like 6-4, you say, OK, well, maybe there was a couple of people on the fence. It seemed like it was a runaway. And I don't know if the family circumstances for either of those guys put them over the top.
I loved Adam's gameplay, so I don't think the family circumstance put him over the top. And I liked Jeremy's. I think he did a good job, but that final tribal council really pissed me off. I said that somewhere else, and I think he got mad about it, but it's the truth.
Yeah. Do you feel like that in both of those cases, that was a 10-person jury, that China, I believe... that was the only season. And then I'm trying to think of Gabon, I think might have been the same thing where you guys had a final three and a 7-person jury. I'm not sure if Gabon is an 8-person jury or not, but it was a smaller jury. And then you had votes going, in your final tribal council, you had votes going to all three finalists. But with a bigger jury, we see more lopsided votes. Do you feel like that groupthink takes over more in a bigger jury?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. You would think that with that big of a jury and three people sitting at the end, that someone's bound to get a vote somewhere. I mean, unless you're really, really bad at the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't know.
Yeah.
Like I love when a vote at the final is split. Like my season, I am more than happy to say that I won with 4 votes and not 7.
Right.
Like that is fine with me.
Yeah.
I would love to see a tie. I think that would be awesome.
Yeah. Well, some people have speculated that Jeff started talking about it last season at the finale, that that maybe there could be one in the future.
I think it would be really cool because Jeff Probst, right before our finale, told me, Amanda and Courtney, he's like, there is a possibility of a tie tonight. And if that happens, you will find out live what we're going to do because only one person will win.
Okay. So in that circumstance where it could have been a tie, then I guess Amanda would have had to cast a tie break vote, assuming the tie was between you and Courtney, but she got more votes than Amanda. So we'll go with that, right?
Yes.
Okay.
That would be my guess.
Yeah. Amanda would have voted for you?
Yes.
Okay. So you still would win?
Amanda would have voted for me, yes.
Okay.
I think so.
All right.
I think so.
Okay. Well, you never know. You never know. She's wishy-washy.
She's wishy-washy. So you really don't ever know.
Okay.
You never know.
This is a question from Chris who wants to ask you, some would say that you fit into the non-athletic superfan archetype that is so much more prominent in today's casting. Do you see yourself as an influential factor in the rise of superfans? And does that make you a game changer?
Oh, well, that's a big compliment. I never really looked at it like that, but I guess in a way, yeah. I was one of the first superfans because I started watching when I was like a kid and waited until I was old enough to audition. And I mean, I knew freaking everything about every season. And now we do get them consistently. I know there's one on season 36.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe if so, that's a huge compliment, and I appreciate it more than people can imagine. But I mean, I am still that nerdy super fan. I have a giant bag full of buffs that I used to wait in line for at Survivor meet and greets when I was 20. That's me.
Well, so, Nalia talked about this over the summer about how she said, and you tell me if this is accurate or not, but she said that she came off of Survivor and she used to do like sort of things like stand-ups when she was a reporter. And she said there was one Survivor fan that would come to all of her stuff. And that person was Todd Herzog.
It was me.
Yeah.
It was me. I would wake up before school because she did it early in the morning. And whenever she was within like 20 minutes of me, I would go to where she was. And I had like my Survivor Marquesa shirt that I would wear. And through her, I got to meet Pascal and Lex. like whenever they would come to do, you know, things with her, like I got to meet some of the contestants through her, and like, it was just, you know, amazing to me. And I was like, one day, Malia, you'll see me on the show.
And she was like, yeah, right, kid, get out of here.
She's like, that's cool. Neat. Oh, my heck.
I had a lot of questions from people. If you watched Australian Survivor, Todd, did you have a chance to check that out? Yeah.
But I've been told,
hey, don't spoil, anything. But yeah. Okay. So people wanted to know if you'd been seeing that, 'cause there was somebody that reminded, people of you in that season, but I'll leave that. I don't want to, you know, get emails from people if we spoil anything. And then I have one other question for you. This is from Mike Edwards, wants to know, Todd, would your life experience since winning Survivor make you a better or worse player? Does life experience correlate with good play? And I thought this was a fascinating question, because I was really thinking about this. I mean, that, do you feel like, are there aspects of your whole ordeal with battling addiction? Does any of that translate into something that would be helpful to you in Survivor?
I would say absolutely. Yeah. I think my, you know, my battle with my alcoholism has shown me that I am 10 times stronger than I ever thought I was. I mean, there were times when my drinking was at its worst where I just did not care if I kept going. And I mean, mind you, I never tried to hurt myself, but I was doing it unintentionally by drinking so much. And coming out on top of that and being able to talk about it and look back on it and realize just how strong I can be as a person. I mean, I can do anything. I can do anything. It's also taught me a lot about people. Like I said, I've met some of the most interesting people in my entire life in treatment. And, you know, Survivor is all about getting to know people and the intricacies of our brains and our minds and how we operate. And, to be honest with you, I feel like my battle with addiction has made me grow in ways that I never would have if I didn't go through it.
Yeah, no, that's really very interesting in terms of your personal story. And I think that everybody would be fascinated to have the opportunity to get to watch you play again. So I think I could speak for the majority of the audience, say that our fingers are crossed that you do get that opportunity.
I'll keep my fingers crossed too, because I would love to play again.
Yeah. And again, I think that everybody listening is probably so happy to hear, you know, it sounds like you're doing, you know, fantastic right now. And, you know, just continued support as much as we can send to you, Todd. I'm sure that I'm sure that it's, you know, all still a challenge, you know, every day, but, you know, just keep fighting the good fight.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And, you know, like, it gets easier. It really does. It gets a whole lot easier. It literally got to a point in my life where I was like, I want to be Todd again. And so I made that choice. And I feel like I've done a really damn good job since that decision last year of saying, like, I'm ready to go on this path of being happy again.
Okay. Todd, if people want to follow your journey and what you're up to, what's the best way for people to keep up with you? Instagram?
My Instagram, yeah, it's just at Todd Herzog, or you can follow me on Facebook, Todd Herzog.
Okay. All right, Todd, anything fun coming up here in the next couple of weeks? What are you doing for Thanksgiving?
You know, I work.
Okay.
I volunteered to work because my mom is Canadian, so Canadian Thanksgiving is in October. But then my father's side, his like extended family, I really have a hard time being around. So I was like, I'll work on Thanksgiving.
Okay. So. What, is there a lot of people going out for sushi on Thanksgiving?
Probably a bunch of Koreans. I don't know. We'll see. I don't know.
Yeah. And please, if Sandra calls you with the good Black Friday deals, will you let us know?
I'm sure they will.
If
yes.
She passes
I'll let you know.
The hot tip on for holiday towels.
You got the Walmart by you?
Yeah.
You gotta go. They're only $2.50. Okay, Sandra.
All right, Todd. Thank you so much, and all the best. Okay.
Hey, thanks, Rob. I really had a good time.
Okay. Thanks so much. All right. There you have it. Todd Herzog on the podcast. Todd was really great. I thought this was a very fun interview. Hope you guys enjoyed it too. Okay. So the next show you guys are going to hear from me is going to be the Survivor Feedback Show. Of course, you still have time. I won't be recording with Brett until about Saturday afternoon. So you have some time to get your questions and comments in. Rob has a website.com/voicemail 323-282-RHAP or email the show. Survivor@robhasawebsite.com. Of course, Brett is going to be joining us in Austin, Texas next month for our final live know-it-alls of the year. If you want to find out more information about that show down in Austin, Texas on December 6th, you can go to robhasawebsite.com/AustinKIA. I also want to give a big shout out to all of our patrons who continue to support Rob Has a Podcast. Without you guys, we would not be able to continue to churn out all of this content. Hope you guys are enjoying the show this season as much as the past seasons of podcasting that we've been doing. To find out more about becoming a patron of Rob Has a Podcast, go to robhasawebsite.com/patron. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.